The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So for this afternoon, we'll look more at speaking itself. And as I said, it's a continuation of last month's Dharma Practice Day series. In terms of right speech and wrong speech, there are four kinds of speech that are abandoned or let go of in this Buddhist tradition. And these are false speech, divisive speech, slander, for example, and harsh speech, and gossip. But in the description of each of these, the description always states the positive alternative. So for abandoning false speech, it certainly says one speaks the truth. That's the alternative, as the adheres to the truth, speaks the truth. But also says, speaks words that are trustworthy and reliable. So the idea that we're saying things which are trustworthy, that people can count on, is a higher standard than simply saying, I'm going to say the truth. For divisive speech or malicious speech, one does not, it has a positive description of it as well. One reunites those who are divided and promotes friendships and enjoys concord. So that's a nice thing, regardless of whether you think it's a good idea to have malicious speech. It's still, there's this other side of it, which is you speak words which are bring people together. For harsh speech, it doesn't define what harsh speech is in the classic description. It just says, one speaks such words as are gentle, pleasing to the ear, lovable, and as go to the heart, are courteous, desired by many, and agreeable to many. That's a wonderful description. Probably, I don't know if you followed it all, but gentle speech, desired by others, goes right to the heart. And then for gossip, it says, the positive side of it is one speaks at the right time, speaks what is fact, speaks what is good, speaks on the Dharma, and one speaks at the right time words that are worth remembering, reasonable, moderate, and beneficial. So the point I want to make here is that even though the precepts here are listed in the negative, prohibitional precepts, this is what you don't do, this is what you abandon, the corollary of doing this is stated in positive terms. These are things actually you would do as a result of this. So in this section here, I want us to kind of consider this topic of harsh speech and words that are gentle, pleasing to the ear, and lovable, go to the heart, and are courteous, desired by many, agreeable by many. So these two things. And I'd like to do this with a discussion for you all, to begin with the topic, why do people speak? Why speak? Well, have you ever thought about why we speak to each other? I mean, probably some of you have heard this, the famous story of Suzuki Roshi, who said, he was a Zen master here in San Francisco, and mostly in the 60s, and he said, talking to his Western students, when you're all meditating, I think you're all enlightened. But then you open your mouth. And he no longer thinks that way. Why do people speak? Why do you speak? What's the purposes of speech? What function does it have? What are we trying to accomplish when we speak? Because I think this is an important area to understand right speech, wrong speech, is to first understand a little bit the functions of it. So I think the first part of this exercise, what I had in mind was you'd form groups of four. Could be the same. It's nice to maybe meet other people. And then have a discussion. Again, go around the circle. This time you don't have to listen as carefully. you don't have to repeat what you just, the person before you said. So, and it can be a little bit artificial to do that. So, it's kind of just. But the idea is to keep it going. So offer something relatively brief, some idea of why you think people speak, and say more than just a word. Say something about why humans speak. What's the function of speaking, and all the different functions of it. And then the next person offers something. The next person offers. You go around, the four of you or so. And when you get around, do it again and again. And as I said this morning, there's something that happens in the group when you start hearing each other and bouncing off each other. And you hear something that someone else says that sparks something in you. You say that to the group, that sparks something in the person that sparked you. And some kind of synergy begins happening. Some synthesis begins happening in the group because of the way it can happen. It can sometimes be kind of special. It's probably nice if you don't plan what you're going to say. Try just to listen to what's being said. And then when it's your turn to speak, allow yourself to have a pause. Pause, relax, and see if what emerges from your, just comes up for you. As opposed to kind of rushing to say something next. And then to go around this way for a while. And then after we do that for a while, stay there, and then we'll do the next side of this exercise. Is this okay? Is understood clear? And there are many functions to speaking, so you can go around and around and around. Okay, so why don't you form groups of four? And if we don't have a good number of multiple of four here, why don't you walk, those of you who can't find a group, walk towards the front, because then the four of you, you'll find each other, but also then I'll help. Okay, so the opposite of harsh speech is to have words which are gentle, pleasing, and lovable, which go to the heart, which go right to the heart. So we'll take about maybe 10 minutes or so for the two of you, each of you, to recount, to tell a story to the person you're with that you're comfortable telling, of some encounter you had where someone spoke in such a way that it went right to your heart, that was pleasing, lovable, that really made a difference for you because of their gentleness or their kindness or something. And going back over your lifetime, can you remember a conversation you were in or some situation you were in where someone spoke in such a way that it made such a huge difference for you that it went beautifully right to your heart, or you just so kind or so supportive or so meaningful or something. Can you think of such a time? And if I spoke in two extreme ways, it can just be a very mild example of that. a small example of some way you experienced that. Okay, is that clear? So maybe you need to think about it a little bit, but when you're ready, you can, first one that seems ready can offer some story and what the experience like, what it was like for you to receive that and be a recipient of it or be in the presence of it. Sit in your place and close your eyes. Take a few moments to check in with yourself. Breathe. Be aware of your body breathing in the midst of however you're feeling, whatever is going on for you. Keep your eyes closed, and I'll tell you the next little exercise, possibly the most difficult of the day. And that is, when I'll ring the bell so you can open your eyes when you hear the bell. When you open your bell, say something nice about the person you've been with. So while you're still sitting here, reflect and think about what might be an honest, nice, supportive, or kind thing to say. Something you appreciate about the person. It doesn't have to be a big deal. Think of something you can say to your partner that expresses appreciation. So then you can offer Yeah. Please come join me here. You come right up here next to me here. Yeah, so maybe it needs to, will everyone fit in? Maybe. Maybe you guys can scoot back a little bit so that a few more people need to get in. Yeah, we're making a circle. Great, thank you. A circle lets us see each other, everyone, and helps everyone to feel like we're all part of the same community. We're all in it together. Sitting all the way in the back corner, and it's easier to be anonymous or not be seen. Here you can see, and you're seen, which is nice. So, what was that like to offer and hear words of appreciation? Needs to be push the button.
I would say it was definitely challenging, not because Diane doesn't have a lot to admire, but because it was getting really personal to a certain extent. Some of these conversations we can kind of abstract ourselves a little bit from, but there was no getting around. I mean, you couldn't be abstract when you're looking at somebody else's eyes and looking to see what you like and admire about them.
I was saying that I find it difficult to accept or to receive things that are good, not because I don't have like self-esteem or anything, but because I don't know how to react without appearing conceited or purely dismissing it, because I know that's not really good either. So it's nice to hear it, but I don't know how to respond to it, is my thing.
Thank you. Yeah.
I'll just chime in. What I learned was that you just say thank you. And.
By the time we got to that part, it was really easy because we'd shared quite personally already from our hearts. And so it just seemed the most natural thing in the world, I think, for me.
It felt like balm on a wounded heart.
Pardon?
It felt like medicine. Balm,
yes.
Balm on a...
What I noticed is something we also talked about in the activity is that giving a compliment is a skill. It's like, and some people are really good at it.
A learned skill. Learned by practicing. Yes.
What I've learned about giving a compliment is that I feel like it's really nice if you have these thoughts in your mind to begin with. Like I've been doing this more in my life, where if I have a really loving, wonderful thought about somebody, or I notice something I think is great about them, I try to tell them. I just want to tell them, you know, because they feel good, I feel good, and it's, you know, and I feel like I've been doing that more, so it's, to me, it's a great joy to be able to do that, and it just felt the same way again.
Nice.
Today. And I also feel like that you can have a deeper connection with someone when because the person feels like you've really seen them.
Nice.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, I was glad to have the opportunity to give Marilyn, to say something to Marilyn that I'd been thinking about her all day, and I never speak to her. So that was nice, and it was much harder to receive one than to give one. I just felt my cheeks getting red and all that. But it occurs to me, from what you said, too, that as a clinician, how angry I am at the training I got about having to be so damn neutral all the time. And that you never tell anybody really, or at least in my training, I think that's not true for everyone, you don't tell them how you feel. And I can just think of moments in my life in which I really, truly regret not having spoken more in that way, more openly and honestly from how I was feeling about a person, because I wasn't supposed to do that.
Mm. Yeah. So, yes, Jean.
I think in the conversation that I had, it was became obvious to both me and Mark, speaking about the experience, not for him, that to tell someone how you feel about them from your heart, you have to say I. Because it's so easy to say, love you. And it's so different if you say, I love you.
Mm.
And the other thing that we talked about too, both of us, was how selfish and reticent we are to say that. Why, for God's sake?
Nice. Thank you.
That love you compels me to talk, because I came from a culture where that was never expressed. And I can say in many ways, like we all can, about our soap operas, you know how tough it was. But there's a basic love there. You know, and I had to learn to understand that and forgive it in order to open up to expressing that love. And I never really gave up the love, you know, but I mean, it was always part of me, but I learned how to express it. And, I mean, the final icing on the cake was mindfulness practice, you know, and retreats, and that's really what liberated me. And it's great. And I felt that intuitive connection with my partner in this, you know, today. And she's already expressed that. And we really did feel intimacy immediately. We expressed it. You know, we felt free.
Nice. So one more, and then we'll go on.
I noticed that, I remember we were talking about the actual emotional experience of opening up and there being a kind of a unification that one can experience between the heart and the mind, like in a, like we were talking about life and death situations, the death of someone or being helpless and very ill, and that the few words like "we're pulling for you," or "you were her best friend," "I'm sorry for your loss," just has such an immediate effect on that unifying that experience, yeah, of letting go, the mind and the heart, and it that's healing, and. Mm-hmm. So it was that experience that we talked about.
Great, great. Healing, unifying the mind and heart. Beautiful expressions. So words, speech, you know, a word is just a word. I mean, I could say blue, or I can say, you know, water. It has no valence. It has not much, you know, just, it's just a word, just sound, you know, and I could say a word in a foreign language probably none of you know, and it would just, you know, it wouldn't mean anything for you. Just, but someone who speaks that language, it would mean, could mean a lot. And so I can say the word elska. It's kind of a harsh word, elska, has a K in it, and elska. And it's a Norwegian word for love. You know, so, you know, just a word, right? Just a word. Just a sound, sounds we make. But the sounds we make have tremendous associations in people's minds, in people's hearts. And so when we use our words, there, it isn't just the sound we make, and not even just the concept even, but there's so much more that's conveyed. And the words have an impact on people. There's an impact in understanding, impact by association, impact by memory, impact by the emotionality, the tone, the intention behind the words. They can have big impacts. Some, in the Buddhist tradition, sometimes our words or our tongue, so they can be referred to the tongue, is said to be an axe. And maybe you'd say for us, our knives, whereas it sounds like a very bad word to be a knife, but mostly people use knives for good things. You know, they're a good useful tool to accomplish something. But occasionally knives are used for unfortunate things or not so good things. So words have an impact. Words have an effect on the world. There are knives that can be used for the good or they can be used for the bad, in a sense. And you all experience now, hopefully, a little bit the power of words, speaking what is good, what is helpful, what's nice. I could have asked you instead. I say, we're talking about harsh speech. I think it would be really good to have an experience of that so we know what we're talking about. And really spend a few minutes thinking about something you really think is, you know, really, really bad about this person, really wrong, completely, you know, and just really lay it into the person, you know, just really show them how harsh you could be. And, you know, we could have done that, but, I think it would have been a terrible use of our time. But you would have gotten a different, very different effect and on it. And so the effect on the community, who we are, how we are today, has a big impact by how we speak. To avoid using harsh speech, I think it might be useful to consider that the word harsh is measured not by, on your terms, how it feels like to you, but rather the impact it has on others. And so what impact does your words have on the world around you? What are you contributing to in the way you speak? Are you in some ways contributing to the betterment of humanity, or contributing to the betterment of the community you're talking to, betterment of the person you're talking to? Not only in the concepts, but in the way that you say it. Are you saying, you know, are you saying things which lift people up, or are you saying people that depress people and deflate them? but what's the effect of your words? And I know that it can be, you know, it can be kind of a burden to kind of measuring and looking at our words and considering them too carefully. But it's good to be aware of how the impact our words can have, and what impact are we having? And so, if there are words that are harsh, speech which are harsh for the persons who are receiving it, is that the intention that we have? Do we want that? Do we want to have that intention in the person that they feel somehow uncomfortable? They feel jangled. They feel hurt by what we've said. Is that what we're trying to do? And I think generally there are times when that's when people want to do that malicious speech. You really want to hurt someone. That's a whole topic in itself. But in ordinary conversation, is that what we want to do? And I think most people would say no, they don't want to do that. But there's reasons why people speak in ways which are uncomfortable for other people to hear. And what do you think some of those reasons are? Harsh speech, jarring speech, agitating speech. What are some of the reasons why someone would choose to talk this way?
Put you down.
Put you down. So that's a little bit malicious, but put someone down. So, thank you. They're afraid.
They're afraid and they're protecting. They think they're protecting themselves.
So it's a way of protecting themselves by doing that. It kind of creates a distance. Or sometimes when you put someone down or harsh or critical, it kind of implies that you are, you know, you're not them, or you're superior,
or afraid of some kind of loss.
Afraid of some kind of loss. So pushing it away so it's not, so sometimes pushing it away so I don't have to be intimate. So avoiding discomfort. Yes?
To stop someone who is doing something harmful.
So stop someone doing something harmful. So sometimes you want to make an impact, and sometimes harsh speech can get their attention. The interesting question there is, it might be effective where they stop what they're doing, but was it the best choice? Or are there better ways to accomplishing the same thing?
It can be. It has been for me an expression of my frustration and inner anger.
So frustration and inner anger spills over into speaking this way that other people have to hear. Releasing that bottled up frustration and anger.
The expression, hurt people.
Hurt people. So if we feel hurt, there's a tendency to then reciprocate with hurting others.
Mm-hmm. Of it, and sometimes it feels like the harsh speech kind of cuts through what I would call the BS. An excuse for doing it.
So a harsh speech can be an excuse to cut through the BS that might be there. It kind of be direct and, you know, to the point and just.
There is a fear that is, there's sort of different classes of fear, and there's a fear of you know, I'm afraid I'm going to die, and that, like, I'm really amazed at, like, how that will change voice and tone. So
if some car cuts you off on your bike, then you might speak in a way that could be characterized as harsh.
Yeah, but I think it's harsh in a different way that I might speak when I'm sort of generally afraid that my image is not being respected or something. Uh-huh.
Great.
I think I agree with that. The degree of fear, I think, escalates sometimes the usage of the speech, how much harsher it gets, uh-huh. or direct, or, you know, you might say a profanity, whatever. You know, it's just, I think that people's fear just escalates what comes out of it.
I think it's kind of like said, when I have an ongoing resentment for somebody that I haven't had resolved, and then the thing that I resent comes up, I'm just like trying to make points to see, look, you do this all the time. And then, you know.
And the unresolved resentment means that there's a pressure inside of you, and that pressure is just ready to pop.
Defiance.
So we speak harshly as a defiant way of getting our way, creating boundaries. No. And so the same topic as I said earlier. Are there better ways of taking care of ourselves? Is it better ways of not going along with what we don't want to go along with? You know, so if we're an adult, to be a defiant, it's kind of rare that an adult has to do something that they don't really want to do. So do we even have to be defiant? Or could it just be like, no, I'm not going to do that, and let me tell you why? You know, so the question is, what's the best use of our words and speech? Yeah.
I have a question because I don't have an answer. But I have someone in my life who swears a lot or uses really graphic, unpleasant ways of describing things. And I'm always surprised, and I'd like to know if people have... So I would say that's harsh speech, but I don't know why.
Why they're doing that?
Why someone chooses that, you know. There's ways to be harsh, and then there's ways to be sort of vile and harsh.
Oh, I see.
You know, that...
Yeah, I guess some of it's learned from other people who do it. It's learned and accepted. Sometimes it's considered to be cool to use language like that. And then some of the things have been said earlier about fear and frustration and are built into it that add to it. So what other ideas people have? Yes?
At a high school where I work at Pali, I speak harshly really to establish dominance.
With the high school students. Have you ever established dominance in a different way?
It doesn't work. Would you please stop doing that? Instead of just stop it.
I use it strategically, sometimes for emphasis and sometimes to get attention. If I don't use the F word in my work in the first 10 minutes, if I'm teaching, I don't get anybody. Actually, sometimes I think it's fun to use that kind of language. It just, I mean, I get some pleasure out of using bad words.
So-called bad words. Just words.
So I appreciate this kind of conversation because I think it's understanding the background of what we do and why we do things and the impact our words do, which is probably going to change our behavior for the better if it needs to be changed. To simply be told, don't practice harsh speech, is not going to go very far. It's kind of limiting and maybe even kind of diminishes us rather than enhances us. But to appreciate the power of words, appreciate the possibilities inherent in words, the consequences, and to realize we have some responsibility about what we choose and the impact we have, and to understand why we choose what we do. If we speak with appreciation, why do we do that? If we speak harshly in a way that's painful for other people to hear, is that okay with us to speak in such a way that's painful for them? What impact does it have not only on the individual but the group that we're with? And And is it the best use? Is it the best use? Is it the best way of accomplishing what we were trying to accomplish? What is the best way of creating, a real heartfelt connection, safety, security in our life, community? So having these questions, exploring it, thinking about it, being much more conscious of it, is the process of becoming mindful and entering into the world mindfully, as opposed to entering the world with rules that you have to follow. Make sense? So this is about entering the world mindfully rather than entering the world with rules to follow. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the approach of this whole series this year, is how do we approach this mindfully, the idea of our ethical life? And this kind of questioning was, in exploration, was an attempt to try to show you that, so that now you go home, you can continue that exploration, as opposed to go home and now I'm going to be really, uptight about, and not speak harshly or something.
This whole conversation reminds me of that thing that most of us probably heard growing up that is so untrue. Sticks and stones will break my bones. Mm.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely the opposite.
Yes, exactly. Words can be powerful. There's a beautiful book, and I apologize, I forgot the name, about by a Jewish thinker about speech, words. Maybe something like Words That Heal, Words That Harm, or something. Do you know this book? You heard of it. But it opens up with a story of a man who blocked the assassination attempt of President Ford. In Sacramento, President Ford was, someone in the crowd pulled out a pistol and tried to shoot him. And this man was right there. He knocked the hand down so that nothing happened. And so he became instantly a national hero, but he didn't want to be. And he tried to be out of the limelight. But the journalist, it was such a big scoop, right? The journalist wanted to find out more about him. So they started investigating, right? And it turned out that he was gay. And that is the 1970s, right? 70s. And so he didn't want this to be known. He hadn't come out of the closet. But they outed him in the newspaper, right? Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can... So he committed suicide. So the impact of words, we have to be very careful. Sorry about that. That was harsh. sometimes I did it partly out of a choice, because it's such an important teaching in that, about the impact of our words, and that it was trying to convey that kind of that kind of teaching. So let's take a break. Because we don't have much time for gossiping.
No,
I know. The